Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email.
Jumping horny toads! That fur-bearing varmint done stole me coffee! Need another!
This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require money. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please buy Sam a coffee via the coffee.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material needs. Special thanks go to our first coffee angel, Juanita Paz Chalacha. Except those wishing to remain anonymous, benefactors will be announced in the final credits. And thank you truly for listening.
Lockpins out!
Lift the gate!
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 17.
This is book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Chapter 16. Marshal Garnett stared coldly through the deputy standing nervously on the other side of his breakfast table.
Short of having one's throat slit while sleeping, discovering Calron's empty cell is probably the worst way to start a day.
An escaped prisoner was not entirely unusual. The Fig Laws could almost always be tracked down and recaptured. But the dark mage on the loose again was a grim situation he was not entirely capable of handling.
Did you open the cell door and look inside?
No, sir.
The deputy blinked eyes once amidst his stare at the wall behind his superior.
We thought it might have been a trick.
No one has opened that door since last night?
No, sir.
Did you check with Jimson? He was on duty at mealtime.
Yes, sir. He said the mage was still there at that time.
Garnett chewed some smoke meat as he tried to think out the situation. Mages were good at opening locked doors, but the cell door was still locked. A few rare mages could easily trick someone into thinking they weren't where they were.
Enchanter Gawain seemed unusually adept at that one.
But Trimble's disenchantment was supposed to take care of any of these problems.
Did Jimson report threats or other fadoodle from the mage?
I didn't ask, sir. Jimson was busy looking for his daughter. He thinks she may have run away from home.
Delcy?
The marshal frowned at the coincidence, then remembered her inquisitiveness. She had tried to lure his own daughter several times in her intermittent explorations of the small underground dungeon.
Sart! I hope she's all right.
She had been warned many times not to wander around down there without her father. Now it seemed she had done it once too many. Garnett pushed aside his plate and stood.
Get the bloodhounds. There are two people to find. I have to call on Trimble first. Have the men meet me at the post.
Having risen early for a day of hunting, Archduke Laune was digging into his second bowl of hot porridge. Believing he was alone in his withdrawing chambers, he jerked his head up and scowled at the shadow stepping out from the drapes.
Who intrudes?
His spoon was stopped halfway between the bowl and his mouth.
Now, Luone. Let's not forget the proprieties when guests attend breakfast.
Calron moved into the diffuse sunlight to allow his former employer to see him clearly. Dropping his spoon and reaching for a dirk at his belt, Laune shoved himself back from the little table. His thick mustache twitched as he stood and glared from beneath bushy eyebrows at the somewhat bedraggled figure approaching him confidently.
Put down that spit frog before you cut yourself.
Calron stopped and waited, his blue-white eyes gazing calmly back at the Archduke's reddish-brown. After a long moment of inspecting his visitor, Laune lowered his blade slowly.
Why, I'd know those icy eyes anywhere. Calron!
The very same.
How did you get in here? For that matter, what are you doing here? It's been more than 8 riads since I discharged you.
A brief tale, my friend, but please, I am merely here for a short visit. Please return to your meal.
Run!
Laune collected his chair and sat down again. A thin, slightly bowed servant appeared in the doorway.
Yes, my lord.
Bring a chair and another bowl for my good fellow.
Raising a single eyebrow at Calron, the middle-aged Rand nevertheless went about his chore without question. Swigging spiced milk generously from his goblet, the Archduke then wiped his green leather sleeve across his mouth.
How did you get into my keep? For that matter, how did you get away from Garnet?
The Marshal's lockup is not as secure as he likes to believe. And as for your glorified hut, I came as the mouse via the wall.
Oh, in that case, I'll have a prayer session with the night watch.
Rand arrived with Calron's bowl and a copper pitcher with more boiled milk.
I noted your empty bed, Luone.
The mage appraised the chase work on the tilting pitcher.
The Archduke is not hurting for money.
Having problems keeping bedmates again.
Snickering into his bowl, the Archduke waggled his breakfast knife at his guest.
You always were the snake charmer, lad. I haven't forgotten all those pretty young girls you managed to snag for me. How did you get so many fleeks, anyway?
Magic, my lord. Simply Duomacraft.
Aye, that.
Laune sat back and tossed his napkin aside.
Though it looks like magic isn't helping you get free of those pretty bracelets.
Leaning forward again, he squinted at the markings on them.
Looks like Trimble's seal, too. I heard about your little game with the townsfolk. Bloody shame you botched it.
Not without unwanted help, I assure you. And now I'm a day or so ahead of the magistrate's axemen.
He finally helped himself to the porridge, glad to taste something hot and not out of a sack. Laune watched him maneuver with the long chain between his wrists for a few moments.
Can't have you wandering about like a puppet without its master. What's it take to get those off?
A mage other than myself?
Can't help you there, lad. Haven't had a hired mage since you left.
Calron stared off into the distance as he rolled a spoonful of the hot porridge around his mouth, trying to remember any freeman mages in the territory. None came to mind, unfortunately.
Don't know if anyone would dare trying to break Trimble's seal anyway. The old wizard carries quite a reputation, you know.
Yes, I know.
Though liberty was sweet, the bleak prospect of traveling without his magic powers was looking more likely than he wanted to admit to himself.
Half the hardy peaks in the old realm are scared to death of him. The other half makes jokes.
Can't blame him. He's a rather simple-looking sort.
Simple or not, his disenchantment spell is potent. But...
He remembered an heirloom the Archduke kept over the hearth in his great room.
What can you tell me about that old sword in the big hall?
"'Twas my great-great-grandfather's claymore. Been over the family hearth since I can remember.
Have you ever used it?
Oh, once or twice I've taken it down and swung it around. Nothing more. Why are you so suddenly interested in it? You never asked anything about it when you were my hireling.
Despite my calm demeanor, Luone, I am a desperate man. Imagine having a sword at your side that you are suddenly unable to use, to touch, while being forced to survive out in the wilderness. That is what they've done to me. Me! I will find a way to break this curse over me. I must. I must have my magic.
I see your problem, lad. If you think something of mine would help, that's fine. But whatever you're going to do, make it quick. They'll be looking for you everywhere, including here. Not many have forgotten you were my pet mage at one time.
Forcing down another mouthful to cover his extreme dislike of that former title, he could not afford to displease Laune at this juncture. Calron nodded agreement and tried not to grit his teeth.
Yes, Lord.
He found consolation in the realization that being dominated by a high-ranking royal official, and a corrupt one at that, was far easier to tolerate than a damned woman. It was the barking of her husband's dogs that alerted the good wife to something amiss in her backyard. Their house was near the town's boundary wall, where rats or rabbits rustling through the bracken on the far side set off the dogs regularly. Their canine challenges usually frightened off the prospecting intruder, but this morning they would not get quiet again. Her husband and two young boys, gone to see what the marshal's alarm was all about, she went to investigate the backyard herself. The sight of all three dogs straining on their leashes as they yelped at the piled stone wall made her a little apprehensive, and she debated either cutting them loose so they could chase whatever it was away, or marching over bravely to see what it was herself. Deciding she would have difficulty living down having her sons rescue her from some half-dead rodent squirming under a fallen rock, she shushed the dogs, grabbed a walking stick for a makeshift club, and moved cautiously toward the wall. Encountering nothing up to the waist-high piled stones adorned with curling tendrils of ivy, she leaned over slowly to survey the other side. The sight of the young girl's torn clothing and terrible bruises purpling her neck horrified her so much she nearly shrieked. The manner in which the girl was sprawled with outstretched arms made it difficult to tell whether she had crawled there from somewhere nearby or had been dumped. She climbed over the wall to see if the child was alive. Calron ran fingers appreciably over the delicate engraving of the Archduke's family relic. Among the standard blessing phrases cut into the polished section of the wide blade, stretching from the hilt to the foible, were several runes indicating it was a magicked blade. Unusual for a two-handed sword, though he was dubious about the magicking's longevity, the weapon had been forged over 250 rieds ago. Regardless, it was an immediate option.
Care to try swinging your heirloom around again?
Hey, and what's my target? Spirits?
See if it will sever these chains.
The mage went over to a corner of the long table dominating the great room and pulled his chains taut across the wood.
An axe would do a better job of that, lad.
Your grandfather's claymore was, at one time, magicked.
Do you say so?
The Archduke regarded the sword with renewed appreciation.
I'm hoping it may retain enough of the charms ingrained in its metal to cut through the magic links of this chain.
As you wish.
He lifted the great blade over his head, the muscles of his arms bulging, and eyed his target carefully.
Lean to the side, lad. This won't hurt a bit.
With the accuracy of his warrior training, Laune swung his sword straight down against the middle of the chain. A blinding flash of white threw both men backward. Laune managed to keep his balance. Cowan fell hard on his rear, the tension between his arms suddenly released. The pain of his fall was quickly forgotten in the happiness of his new freedom. He held up the severed ends of the chains and smiled with satisfaction.
Blood!
The Archduke inspected the splintered and smoking table end, then the small chip taken out of his blade.
Tis indeed magic, my friend!
Calron stood and stretched his arms in both directions, luxuriating in the fresh flow of energy he felt with the release of the restrictive disenchantment. Though his wrists were still fettered with metal shackles, they were no longer bound together. Overwhelmed with the flood of magic surging through him, he threw his arms toward the hearth, sending a cluster of fiery spheres darting into it. Crimson sparks scattered into the air like magical cinders. Laune dodged them best he could.
Damage.
Clasping his hands and bowing his head reverently, Calron congratulated himself for recognizing the necessary tools to end his magical incarceration. After half a moon's imprisonment and disenchantment, he was finally free again.
Somehow he has managed to break the disenchantment bonds.
Trimble gazed intently into his crystal, watching the clear images of Calron and Archduke Laune. On the opposite side of the desk, the Marshal sat up in his chair and frowned with concern.
I thought those were unbreakable.
Under all but the most extraordinary circumstance, a mage with power equaling mine or an artifact of similar ilk?
Wonderful. So where is he?
With the Archduke presently.
Damn.
He would go there. I can't fight the Archduke without adequate authority or manpower. Either would take too long to muster.
Lowering his crystal to its stand of wrought brass, the aging mage looked up at his associate.
You are the law enforcer for Hopetown and the surrounding territories. Calron is still in your jurisdiction.
But Luone has royal jurisdiction over the entire realm. Without a viceroy to supersede the dukeship, I have no legal power with which to challenge him. The crown would see it as an insurrection against its own instead of an attempt to capture a fugitive.
Trimble leaned back in his stuffed chair and crossed arms with amusement.
Now, Garnet, you don't honestly believe the Archduke would harbor an escaped criminal, do you?
Calron was his pet mage for several rieds.
That was long before King Kajor inherited the throne. Ever since, Laune has tried hard to keep his slate of hirelings above suspicion in the hopes that he will win the title of viceroy. Just think of the unrest it would cause if word got out about him sheltering an accused criminal from trial and execution.
True, there is that point.
Trimble steepled fingers before himself.
You're reacting quickly and commendably, perhaps too quickly in this case. Let the feathers settle. Calron will be on the move, either to run far away to safety or to plan his revenge.
Are you saying I should just allow this madman to go free?
No, my friend. I'm saying wait a day or so before you choose a direction. If you went to the Archduke's keep, you would have to make uncomfortable accusations and put your commission and deputies in jeopardy. Laune knows how dangerous it is to openly assist Calron. Wait until he leaves the Archduke's protection. Calron knows the territory's anger at him. He will run soon, probably today. Exactly where, we don't know yet.
And just how will you know where he goes?
Garnet drummed fingers on the desktop.
The disenchantment chains have always been the weakest part of the bonds I placed on him. He has broken them, but not the shackles on his wrists. Short of cutting off his hands, he cannot remove those. They will act as a beacon.
So we'll know where he goes. How will that help when someone catches up with him? He has his powers back. Gawan was the only man who considered going after him in the first place. I'll not presume upon him to repeat the task.
Trimble shrugged indifference.
Every man decides his tasks in life. It doesn't hurt to ask him again for help.
The marshal nodded dramatically with a sweep of his hand.
All right. He's on his honeymoon with Flena right now. When he gets back, you ask him.
Both turned to Trimble's apprentice, the half-elfin Glan.
Master, there are some women at the doors demanding the marshal's attention.
Eh? What women? What about?
They found Deputy Jimson's daughter, severely injured but alive.
Gods!
Garnet stood hurriedly but was stayed by Trimble's hand. He glared expectantly at him.
If you want me to bring up the matter with Gawan, I will. But whatever you decide, don't wait very long. Calron will be ill-prepared to defend himself with anything other than his magic right now. Let him roam too long, he will gather forces again and make his recapture impossible.
Mage and Marshal exchanged calculating looks.
With Delcy being found, I fear my problem now will be to prevent a mob from storming the Archduke's keep and getting themselves hurt.
He raised a warning finger and moved eyes cold as steel between Glan and Trimble.
Tell no one about his location.
Much as I'd like repayment for services rendered, a couple of pretty fleeks for my bed would be nice. It's better you leave immediately.
Laune remounted the chipped claymore on its hooks above the hearth.
I'll have quite the tale to tell some day about the bite taken out of the claymore, though I can't afford the gossip if you're found here.
Rolling his eyes at the necessary discretions of a man seeking higher station. In his mind, appointed posts meant service to someone undeserving, be it subjects or kings. Calron grunted agreement, only too happy to be on his way. If he stayed for any length of time, Laune would no doubt put him to work doing more than just finding virgin wenches to frequent his bed. At the same time, he saw nothing wrong with pushing his advantage. If the Archduke wanted him away quickly, then so be it.
I'll need a horse, clothing, provisions.
The boots he had stolen were too small, his feet squeezed just enough to ache.
Done. Which way are you heading?
West.
He chided himself for being so quick to reply. Laune would pass this information along in order to appear lawful and keep his character as unblemished as possible. Appearing to assist the marshal in his hunt for him would keep his general reputation above reproach, though it was well known in the royal ranks that he was not the most loyal subject of his king.
Give me a few hours' lead if you can.
If I can.
Wanting to be away before he lost his temper, Calron spun on his heel and headed for the stables to select a suitable horse. He knew everything he had requested would soon follow. Garnet leaned over the bed and grimaced at the massive bruises on Delcy's throat, inwardly amazed that she had somehow survived Calron's murder attempt. A physician had been sent for, but it would be midday by the time she arrived from the bayshore village of Conk. Outside the window, he could hear his deputies keeping away the curious. There was enough rumor and gossip running rampant as it was. Worse, the difficult questions and subsequent blame would eventually come to roost over his and Trimble's authoritative heads. For the moment, however, he had to find out exactly what had transpired. The fair-haired girl breathed with an uncomfortable-sounding rasp, her body all but motionless beneath the blanket that had been carefully laid over her. Garnett looked up at Jimson standing in the doorway, with fists clenched tightly, the man's demeanor one of grim fury and determination. Mage or no, he would avenge the wrong done to his own blood.
There are other marks on her.
Garnett turned to the goodwife, who was huddled in a corner of the small room, and waited for her to continue. She swallowed uneasily and nodded her head at Delcy's body.
"'Tis best if you see for yourself, Marshal."
Glancing at Jimson, who looked mystified at this bit of news, Garnett lifted the blanket slowly and contained his shock at seeing her bodice ripped and the additional small bruises around her breasts. He had known Calron to be narcissistic and murderous, but not perverted.
Of course, anything is possible where a desperate criminal is concerned.
Not prepared to lift her skirt and see bloodstains that would confirm her being raped as well, he lowered the blanket and looked again at her father.
Can she talk at all? Only just.
Garnett touched her hand lightly.
Delcy? Delcy?
She opened her eyes slowly and blinked at him.
Did the mage do this to you?
She nodded barely, wincing at the pain in her neck.
Did he put his hands on your body?
Yes.
Garnett puzzled about how to approach the next question.
Did he hurt you anywhere else other than your chest and your neck?
Tears brimmed in her brown eyes as she looked longingly at her father, wordlessly seeking forgiveness and protection.
Didn't wake up for a long time.
Garnett let this one go. The question of her being raped could be answered by the physician when she arrived. Knowing that Jimson would feel awkward with the next question, he was forced, nevertheless, to ask her.
Why did you let the mage out?
She looked away, embarrassed, clearly not wanting to admit to her foolishness. Yet this action confirmed his suspicion that she had been Calron's liberator. Garnett was aware that she had more than paid the price for what she had done.
Tell me, Delcy, you're the daughter of my best deputy. You're honest, I know, and very, very smart. Even so, Calron is tricky. He can make you believe in beautiful lies.
Promised me magic.
Good girl.
Patting her hand encouragingly, Garnett straightened and narrowed his eyes at the sky beyond the window, damning his own blindness. Bearing the familial pride in her law officer father one would expect from a child, Delcy had accompanied him on his town patrols as often as she could from age 8 onward. The occasional sight of the fair-haired little girl marching proudly beside her father was popular around town, everyone adoring the admiring daughter. Garnett had allowed it, feeling the image gave his law the appearance of gentleness amidst firmness. Plus, Delcy had always been completely obedient to any instruction given her. Jimson's staunch belief in the law and his longevity in the service had recently gained him promotion to senior deputy. With it, he had duties over the worst of any prisoners, thus no one really gave any thought to his little girl's occasional visits into the dungeon alongside him. If only he had realized Delcy was old enough and capable enough to do such a thing, he would have banished her from being in the post altogether long before this might have happened.
But who would suspect an innocent girl just past her 12th riad would consort so closely with such a dangerous criminal?
Ascribing it to simple curiosity, he let the matter go, more concerned with the dilemma on his hands. If Calron had merely escaped, it would have been difficult to find anyone brave enough and skilled enough to go after him, bring him back. Now the exact opposite was the problem. Calron duped a child into setting him free, then strangled and molested her, a well-known and practically celebrated daughter of the town.
The gossip mongers will call it nothing short of violent rape.
The territory would be in an uproar, with entire villages determined to hunt down this outlaw, this child killer, in order to protect their young. Worse, there would be an open distrust of mages practiced, something they could not afford to happen. The only way to resolve the social issue quickly and keep mages free of prejudice would be to send a known mage after Calron to kill him. Nothing less would be tolerated. His body would have to be brought back as proof of justice served, a headless corpse staked outside the town proper to demonstrate their exacting justice for criminal mages.
We'd better be going, Marshal. I want to strangle the bastard myself before anyone else gets to him first.
Gesturing for his underling to follow him, Garnett shifted his tabard back over his shoulder and walked outside, his deputies gathering around him.
I'm issuing a royal warrant for Calron's death.
As one, the men gripped sword hilts in formal recognition of the order. He was pleased to see this fellowship and dedication among his own.
However, as you well know, this particular fugitive is deadly, cunning, and a sorcerer. A blatant manhunt will be inadequate against his magic and result in more deaths.
He allowed the implication of his statement to sink in. The men shifted uneasily, exchanging wary glances with each other.
Send teams of well-armed scouts immediately to all villages and outposts in the realm. Keep the Black Fox on the run. There's a possibility he could be found and killed in the search. However, once we know the direction he's gone, and you can be sure he'll try to leave the restored realms of Rue and Roth, we'll send the best men for the hunt. And yet, short of a well-practiced mage or enchanter, anything less than an army of archers sent after Calron would be futile.
He hated to do this to his friend, but he could not risk so many lives in a wasted effort. When it was over, he would repay him handsomely. At least he didn't have to worry about asking any more.
As Royal Marshal, I invoke the King's High Law. Enchanter Gawain and those he chooses to join him are charged to hunt down and kill Calron.
Diversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2024. Character voices for Episode 16 are performed by Brenda Louise Thompson, Kevin Norris, Darcy Aradell, Richard Hammer, and H, the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of the delightful Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, Sarah Chapman, Florian Serral of Tiny Music, Chris Haig, Francesco D'Andrea, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under LibreLibre Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.